So I was. I probably should have moved that over because I like to, I don't know, move around in class. Wednesdays, what I was thinking about doing was for my lesson Sunday is doing more of a discussion about it, kind of question and answer. I'm going to go a little bit along those ways as well. And kind of, I talked about discipline, correction this past Sunday morning and talked about the things and the aspects of that and what that means, right? And a lot of times we talk about discipline. We talk about correction. It's usually in a negative sense. We don't like to hear it. We don't like to talk about it. Remember, I used a lot of times at your workplaces, you get an annual review, a yearly evaluation, whatever it is. And so you can see how you're doing. I didn't do it, but part of me thought I wanted to put a checklist up here, like an evaluation, and each one of us take a look at it and pass to whoever's sitting next to you and let them evaluate you and see how you're doing. Right? That's going to be a little difficult because when we think in our work, in the workplace, right? Our bosses, our coworkers, whoever it may be, whoever evaluates you, your manager, they look at your performance, right? They look at your work, what you've done. Maybe you're given X number of assignments or you have this that you have to do. And normally we don't have just one thing to do, right? It's usually a number of things we have to do. So think about your job. You're there at work. You have a number of things you're trying to do. You're trying to get done. And right? Sometimes it's like you snap your fingers and you're done. It's the end of the day. And you feel sometimes a little overwhelmed. Last couple of days, I've just had a lot of work to do and felt overwhelmed in a sense in there. Well, anyways, you have all these things you have to do. And think about your evaluation. When it comes, and your boss sits down, your manager sits and talks with you, and he runs over. We have these forms that the captains fill out, and there's different ideas, there's different areas, excuse me, and you're rated. You get pluses and checks and minuses and different boxes, and then you're given a score in these different things. One might be, I'm trying to remember what it is, interaction with the public is one of them on there. So how do you do, right, and how do the officers judge you or rate you on how you do with interacting with others. And there's different checkboxes, different ways. I meant to even grab one just to kind of go along with what I'm saying. So Sunday when we're talking about this, right, and we think about our own personal evaluation, what about us? What happens if we're evaluated right now in a spiritual sense? And I told you Sunday, and we all know this, but it seems like we often take work more seriously than we do our service to God. Right? And you think about the things, we almost take too much of a relaxed attitude, maybe, towards God that we wouldn't take at work. And think of some of the things maybe from a personal standpoint for each and every one of us, what we do that we sort of get away with at work. And there's a number of things we can be there. And then again, how do we fix that? How do we change it? Too often, the things we do become, the wrong things we do become normal. And again, what are the things that we, do we change, or excuse me, do we seek to change it? Do we seek to fix it? Or do we just go along and keep going along with it? We watched a video not too long ago, and it was, I think it was from the early 90s. It was an astronaut, and actually, I had this pulled up because I want to get his name right. Mike Mullane. He was an astronaut. He spoke at the International Association of Firefighters annual convention, and he talked about this normalization of deviance. It wasn't an original idea of his. It was from an author who actually wrote about the Space Shuttle Challenger and how the effects of normalization, it's called, of deviance led to that disaster. Long story, and I don't want to repeat the whole thing, but if you get a chance, you can YouTube this, watch this video, because it's a really good video. And he's up there talking, and what he's talking about is the Challenger and how these things led to a disaster. Basically, to kind of set up a background with this, and I'll get to my point in just a second, so bear with me. There were several memos from the engineering firm handling the booster rockets on the Space Shuttle Challenger. And they told them about how, if this continues, how you're going right now, there's going to be a disaster. Long story. There were a couple memos. One was about a year before the disaster. One was 5 or 6 months right before the disaster. And it warned NASA basically to ground the fleet right now. And again, I don't have all the specifics. Can't tell you the details. I'm not an engineer. But the O-rings that were on there, there was damage happening to them. But, and again, I'm kind of paraphrasing and shortening all of this. Well, the engineers looked at it that this problem would happen every so many flights, so many missions, but there would be X number of missions where no problems happened. So, okay, it's fine then. Problem would happen, then there would be several missions where the problem didn't happen. And he called this the normalization of deviance. In other words, we tend to keep doing the wrong things, and here they didn't fix the problem. They didn't ground the fleet because it was too important. It was too precious. They had to keep this going, right? And this normalization of deviance is we keep doing the wrong things because, one, we don't seek to correct it. Two, nobody corrects it. But it becomes so normal then. Doing the wrong becomes so normal that that's the way to go. And that's kind of like the world today, right? I mean, think about all the things that we hear in the news, we hear on TV now. You know, how normal is homosexuality today or gay weddings, right? You don't know which bathroom to use, unfortunately, today. And then there's an argument, right? You can't hold the All-Star game for the NBA in a state that doesn't allow men to use women's restrooms, women to use men's restrooms, pick the restroom you want. But that's how, I want to say ridiculous we've become as a society, but it's also how normal we've become as a society, right? Because we've been doing wrong for so long that that's just the normal thing. And until we correct it, until we change it, that it'll keep becoming the norm. And then what's going to happen is those things which are worse will become the norm. So again, if you get a chance, watch that video, Normalization of Deviance, if you can remember that. Or if you want to ask me, I can write it down for you as well. But going back to even what we were talking about before, and we talk about correction, we talk about discipline and the things we need. Well, I used the analogy Sunday morning about there's a ship heading towards the rocks. And that ship needs a correction. It needs a change of course. But everyone stands around and looks at it and says, well, someone else is going to do it, right? Someone's going to fix it. Someone else is going to change the course. And I know, and it's kind of silly to think, but everyone's looking at each other smiling, saying, I wonder what's going to happen. That's exactly what we're doing today. That's exactly what our society is like today, that we're completely off course and we keep going because it is so normal, right? But nobody wants to change it until what happens, until it crashes, whatever that crash may be. But there are things that we have to do to change it. Well, let me ask you this. Who's going to change it? Well, we are. We have to. It's not enough for us to continue to say that someone else is going to do it, that someone else is going to take care of it. It's not enough to be on that ship anymore and look at each other and smile and, again, wonder what's going to happen. When are we going to step forward? When are we going to do it? And the normal thing, I think, unfortunately, and I'll say in the church even now, has become that someone else is going to do it. Someone else is going to take care of it. Now, think of your evaluation, your annual evaluation that you're going to get. I'm not really going to give it to you, but just pretend like you were going to get one. Maybe what are some things we can list on there? So maybe studying our Bibles. How often do we even open up our Bibles outside of these doors? How many things in general for God do we do outside of these doors? How often do we pray? How often do we study? How often do we speak to others? And we're going to get to personal evangelism and speaking and talking to others in just a minute here. But how often do we do those things? Or don't we? Because that's someone else's job. That's someone else's responsibility, right? Because someone else is going to turn that wheel on that ship and change that ship's course, right? Someone else is going to do it. You know, if you were driving in your car and it was going the wrong way, you're not going to sit there and think it's just going to change itself. In a few years, you're going to have cars that probably are more so going to be doing that. But no, not today. So we need to think about our own evaluation and what's on there. How many of those things are we doing? How many pluses maybe we would get in that? How many negatives would we get in there? Is it enough? Or again, are we coasting and just saying someone else is going to do it and someone else is going to take care of it? So let's talk a little bit tonight. What I want to do is, in a sense, go along with what I was saying Sunday morning, but talk about our own personal evangelism, our own, personal, I lost my place here just a second, our own personal evangelism and why we do it, what we need to do and how we need to take care of it. Because again, I always even use work as an analogy. If we were at work, would we just say someone else is going to do our job? Whatever your job may be, someone else is going to do it. Someone else is going to handle it. I'll sit here at my desk or stand here at my station, whatever it may be, and someone else will do it. No, and we know that's not true. We know that's not going to do it. But again, we have to discipline ourselves. We have to make ourselves do it because it's not something that's just going to happen. Again, in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 8, as I read Sunday, I know, Matt, you used this a week ago as well, but it says, "For why bodily training is of some value, godliness is of value in every way, as it holds promise for the present life and also for the life to come." So again, we know that there's certain things with our body that we have to do. We have to take care of ourselves. If you're sick, if you have an illness, you have to do something. You have to take medication. Right? You get into something, there's medication you have to take. So there's a process or something you have to do. I have to take medications now. I can't just sit there and Augusta walks up to me and just feeds me the pill in the water. It doesn't just happen. It doesn't float and it happens there. I have to take it. So again, we all have to do something. Now, when we talk about our personal work, there's a lot of opportunities, right? There's a big, I guess, a broad area of responsibilities, a broad area of opportunities in our personal work. What are some things we can do in our personal evangelism or personal work? What are some ideas? What are some things, thoughts? Yeah, invite people, phone calls. Anything else? Yep. Yeah. I heard another one. Yes. Cards. There's so many things that we can do, and they're so simple and easy, right? They're not difficult. I think too often that we put an idea of difficulty with these things. We put this that that you have to get up here and stand. Everyone's looking at me right now, and it's not always the best thing. There's some nervousness to this, but we don't all have to do that. All of us don't have to do that all of the time either. There are so many little things that we can do, and we've heard a few examples here, and I'm sure we have a lot more. But we think about, we talked about calls. We could give those tracks. We can even mention some. How often have you been out and someone's even mentioned, and I'll just say, quote-unquote, church? Anywhere, whether it's work, whether it's out somewhere, and you've had a conversation with them. I don't want to say you'd be surprised, but a lot of times it can be positive, at least your discussion. Maybe the ends of it doesn't always turn out that way, but otherwise, if you don't say anything, what's going to happen there? Let me ask you this, how often do people come up to you and ask you where you worship, ask you about God, ask you about things in the Bible? How many times this week did that happen? A lot? So much that you can't even remember and tell me? I mean, I don't know about you, but you don't have to raise your hand, but it was zero for me. No one came up to me this week so far. We got a few days left. We'll see. And has asked me. So what does that mean? What does that say to me then? Well, it says I have to do something, right? I have to make that step. And we've made it that, I talked about that normalization of deviance earlier. We've made it so normal that, well, that's not my job as a Christian. That's not my job. I'm not the preacher. I'm not one of the elders. I'm not him. I'm not her. You see, what we do is we make excuses for not doing something. You know someone who makes, we all probably know these people too, and they make more work out of getting out of work. And you know that, and they do everything they can do to get out of work, that it's like, if you actually just did the task, you did the job, you would be done by now. And I know a couple people like that, and it's like, they put so much effort into not doing something that they've doubled, if not tripled, the amount of work to get out of it than just doing it in itself. But that's what we do, right? We go ahead and we make so much work out of not doing work that, again, we paint it on somebody else. We say someone else is going to do it. I was reading a book not too long ago. It was a former Navy SEAL commander, and he talks to businesses. And what he talks about there is, he says, there are no bad teams, just bad leaders. And he gave examples before on when he was in the SEALs and how they did the trainings. And you may have seen them before. They 7-man boat crews, and they hold those boats, and they go running, and they have to go and do all these different drills with them and race in them. And he talked about there was one team that the crew came in last every time, almost every time. And the one, it came in every single time, came in first. Long story, not to keep going on with these stories, but he switched the leaders in those teams. And guess what? That team that was last every single time came in first the very next time. And all it is about motivation. It's about effort. It's about doing something. Imagine, again, if we all didn't do any, I'm not even talking any personal teaching, any personal outreach, any personal evangelism, and all we did was come in here and sit. What if I just sat down right now and I just stared forward here as well? What would happen then? Maybe somebody would step up. Maybe someone would do it. Or nothing would happen. Then what would we learn? It would be a very uncomfortable silence, right? So we can't just do that. Now, the thing is, with personal work, with personal evangelism, all of us can do it. All of us can do that, unless you have some type of physical disability where you can't move, you cannot communicate with someone, then maybe that you can't. We all can do some type of personal work. And the thing is, opportunities are always there. And it can be done anywhere, right? Now we talk about, well, here we get a large number, so to speak, in here where we can talk. But when we do it personally, we don't need a large room like this. We don't need a pulpit up here. We don't need even a large crowd. Again, I mentioned those places, our works, our schools, our homes even. Some people have gone to the jails and spoken there. There's so many places, so many opportunities, I should say, where we can do it. And it can be done anytime. When you think about our preaching, it's kind of limited, isn't it? We're here Sunday morning, Sunday evening, Wednesday evening, you know, and then a meeting a few times a year. Other than that, there's not a lot of time. We'll call it maybe preaching time. There's just a few minutes each week even. But when we do it personally, it's kind of at our convenience or at the other person's convenience, right? We're not limited by time in there. The other thing is, it reaches everyone. The thing is about God, about Christianity, is there's no class of person. There's no race of person, right? It doesn't matter if you're black, white, if you're poor, if you're rich, if you're in between in any of these. None of that matters, right? None of that makes any difference. It's available to everyone. Again, so everyone can be reached through it. And it works. Do we do it? Do we use it? How many of you, even in this audience, you don't have to raise your hand or say, but how many of you are here tonight even because someone just talk to you on a personal basis. Whether it's a family member, a relative, a coworker, whatever that may be. Has someone even reached out to you? Maybe you didn't even know to come here. Maybe you never knew this existed a year or two ago. This building, I should say, existed. That the Brown Street congregation here existed. That the church even existed. Are we dedicated? Then we can ask, many ask the question, well, why me? Because, look at me in John chapter 15 real quick. If anyone has a comment or would say anything, please don't hesitate. Raise your hand. If I don't see you, go ahead and yell. But John 15, and let's look at the beginning here in John chapter 15. Many times, again, people will say, well, you know, why do I have to do it? That's not my job. Christ here in John 15 says, I am the true vine, and my Father is the vine dresser. Every branch in me that does not bear fruit, he takes away. And every branch that does bear fruit, he prunes, that it may bear more fruit. Already, you are clean because of the word that I have spoken to you. Abide in me, and I in you. As a branch cannot bear fruit by itself, unless it abides in the vine, neither can you unless you abide in me. I am the vine, you are the branches. Whoever abides in me and I in him, he it is that bears much fruit. For apart from me, you can do nothing. If anyone does not abide in me, he is thrown away like a branch and withers. And the branches are gathered, thrown into the fire, and burned. So, what is Christ saying that our job is then? Our job, all of our jobs, is to bear fruit. It's not just, you know, this row over here, or this row here. All of the males in this row, all the females in this row. No, it's all of us. We're all required to bear the fruit here, right? So, if you want to say, well, ask the question, why me? Or if you want to say, well, it's someone else's job, it's someone else's responsibility, then you've missed the mark, you've missed the point. If you've been doing that all along, again, you've made, I talked about the normalization of deviance that gentleman brought up before. You've made that the normal. That's your normal. And you've decided that that's what's right and that's what's okay. But it's not, because again, it says here that if anyone does not abide in me in verse 6, he is thrown away like the branch and withers. And again, it talks earlier that we must bear fruit. If we're not bearing fruit, we're not abiding in him. So we all have to do something. It's all of our responsibilities. Again, it's not just mine. It's not just hers. It's not just his. It's every single one of us here. But too often we make it the normal that we're just here, and I know I've repeated this many times, we're just here to take our seat. We're just here because it's Wednesday night. And that's what I do every week. They're going to think something's wrong. Someone might bother me if I'm not there on Wednesday night, because that's where I always am. Any comments, questions at this point? Paul, go ahead, please.
You know, we have just two types of sin, sin of commission and sin of omission. And we concentrate on the sins of commission so much, you know, because that's sin of the feet that shouldn't do that, shouldn't do that. And we just sort of like, sometimes we just don't even think about the sins of omission.
Right.
And we just, you know, we can sit there and go, you know, one whole day without doing any sinning.
Right, because we, again, I think that's, and that you brought that up, I think it's one of those things, too, that we think, well, I didn't do anything, so I'm not wrong, I'm not bad in there, right? And we think, it wasn't me, it wasn't my part. No, good point, because I think you're right. I think it's one of those things that I think in life, too many people are just coasting, Christians especially, that we're just coasting and thinking, all I have to do is show up. All I have to do is warm that seat. And if I get enough times, you know, then we think of it as, what's the word I'm looking for? You know, after, it's not even going to sound, no, this isn't going to sound right when I say it. After so many years, you know, you can retire from your job. Then you don't have to work anymore. Well, then I think, unfortunately, too many people find that, yeah, you do. You don't have, you know, that freedom just to stop working and do it. So we're constantly doing it, Matt. No, no, go ahead.
One of the best things I found tonight to open up the conversation happened this week. Is anytime you mention someone, a friend, and it's someone within the church, don't just say a friend of yours. Oh, this friend of mine, I know. Say a friend of the church.
Right. Right. Give me 1 second because I'm going to go on his too and I'll get to you. Yeah, absolutely. And Matt, what Matt was talking about there is, and I'll kind of even sum it too if you didn't hear, but when someone talks about or even brings up, I think, church, it doesn't seem to you then, and you can answer anyone else, that sometimes we seem to shy away from that. If someone says, well, I go to St. Paul's Catholic Church, especially at work or somewhere. I don't know if you've dealt with that, but I've seen a lot of times, and I've actually probably been guilty of it myself. But it realistically, that is the opportunity that you have. And then what's it going to do? You talk about starting a conversation. Then you start, at least get that seed, get someone in. And you're right. Then what will happen there? Well, too often we probably say, well, no, they're Catholic. They're never going to go to my church. They're never going to go where I go, right? But what do they know? Maybe they just even started going there. What more do they know? Do they even know the right thing? And again, I kind of go back to, sometimes I take it for granted that I grew up, you know, in the church, and not everyone has. Maybe you haven't, and it took time to, you know, maybe you, someone told you, talked to you, planted that seed, got you thinking that, well, this is the right way. Maybe you came from a denomination and you thought this was always the right way. And what I'll say with denominations, too, it goes back to that normalization of deviance is, well, that's how we always did it. And I had someone tell me that at work one time. There was something, it was wrong, right? And whatever we were doing wasn't the best way to do it. And I said, well, why are we doing that? Well, no, that's just always how we've done it. And that was the reason. So let's keep doing the wrong thing because that's what we always have done. That's what my family has done. That's what my friends have done. So, yeah, great point, because that opportunity is always there. And a lot of it is us using that opportunity. Oh, you want to know? Go ahead. No, go ahead. Taylor, you're next. Right. It's always there. It's just about us doing something about it. And I think too often that we're just too lazy about it, right? Oh, I mean, I hope no one's done this, but I don't have time to talk with them right now about this. I gotta go. So Taylor, please, your next. Good. See, yeah. No, great point. Absolutely. And again, it's one of those things that we have to take action on. We can't just assume it's going to happen. And you talked about discipline. Again, and I said it in the beginning, too often it's a negative thing. But discipline can be a very good thing. It can be a great thing. In sports, that's one of the best analogies to even use in it as well. Because, like I said, Sunday, I got yelled at a couple times when I played soccer and stuff, and you don't want to go this way when you're supposed to go that way. Hopefully you're never going the wrong way. It's a terrible feeling when you score on your own team. Accidentally it happens sometimes. I'll just put it that way. But right, you have to discipline yourself. You have to do it. Otherwise, what's going to happen? I mentioned in sports, you're not going to win. It's going to be a terrible team. And you have to discipline yourself as a Christian more so. There are a lot of things. Raise your hand if there's nothing in this world that tempts you. Raise your hand if you're completely impervious to sin. Raise your hand if you're going to do right 100% of the time the rest of your life. Go ahead. I mean, you actually go ahead if you... No, you can't. You cannot do it, right? We know, and the problem comes into when we think that that we won't sin, when we think we're just invincible to the devil, invincible to the things of the world that are out there today. And the problem is that we have to discipline ourselves. We have to take that and do it and use it. And you said, right. I mean, how many times, if you don't feel almost every day of your life that there's temptation creeping in on you, that there's some problem going to happen, you're going to run into problems. You have to discipline yourself. You have to be ready for that. I talked a couple lessons ago. I believe I did it here. But I said we have to always be ready. I always see this light up here for the baptism. There's a red light, and it shines when it's ready, right? But we have to be ready for everything. The problem is that we're too, I'll say it again, we're too lazy, and we think everyone else is going to take care of it, that we're not disciplined enough to be ready to take care of something, especially in our lives as Christians. Barb, go ahead. Right. Good point, because we are. It's true. Barb said that we're so competitive in everything else in life, right? It's everything. We're even competitive in who got to the left lane first, who got to the right lane, they got too close to me. It's everything in life. Every single thing in life, as she mentioned, is we are competitive. But you're right. Are we competitive in our lives as Christians? Are we doing those things? Do we want to be? The other thing, too, is that probably maybe determination is what we'll call it. You know, are we determined enough that we want to be there, that we want to get there? And I was going to use this for my invitation, so I'll give you a little preview of it. But are we determined to do what is right? Are we determined to change that normalization, that deviance of that normalization, and put it right? Because if we're not determined, nothing else will ever matter. It doesn't matter. Greg, sorry. Right. Right, and if everyone heard, Greg was talking about that we have to sanctify Christ in our hearts first. And everyone around us has to see it, has to see that we're a Christian. And one of the biggest things we talk about evaluations, I talked in the beginning here because we're almost out of time, is the fact that does someone recognize us as being different? I think it was Brother Bill's in his Sunday morning class. Someone correct me if I'm wrong. Talked about that we have to be peculiar. I can't even talk right now. I'm a little dry. Or did Greg, you said that. I'm going back to him again. I'm sorry. You did say that. So you're right. We have to be. Otherwise, it was in your invitation last week. And we have to be. We have to be different. Did the other one already ring? No? Okay, not yet. I probably have, 30 seconds or that? So you're right. We have to be different. We have to be set apart. And people have to see it. Otherwise, here's the other thing, our evaluation. Are we different at work? Are we different outside these doors? And do people know that? If you were to say, let's ask somebody at your work or someone at your home, whatever, or not your home, your school, well, yeah, they're a Christian. Would they be surprised by that? That's a big one right there. Are they surprised? Wait, he goes to church? She goes to church? They're a Christian? And that should be a big problem if that's ever told to you or said to you. That is there. I've known people before where they talk about, and again, you try to talk to them, they talk about going to church or doing this, and they're a completely different person maybe outside of the world. So we have to think about that ourselves and our personal work. And again, great. Thank you for your time this evening. It was a good conversation, as usual, which is good. I don't always get through my points. But again, think about the discipline. Think about that. Use that analogy, that ship. When are we going to stop it? When are we going to turn it? And when are we going to move it? Or is wrong the normal now that we keep going? Because that's how we are in the world today. And it's going to take all of us, every single one of us, to stand up and to stop it. Thank you.